TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Hoodwinked in the Hothouse. Resist false solutions to climate change. With Ananda Tan, Tom Goldtooth, and Jackie Patterson, U.S., and Arielle Deranger, Canada, and Monica D'Oro, Micronesia. After the recent heat waves, fires, floods, and storms, the word climate change finally shows in mainstream media and politics. And some hold out hopes that the burning of fossil fuels will be phased out. For the last 20 years, Indigenous organizations have come together to take their issues with deforestation, mining, ocean acidification, and sea level rise to the United Nations climate conferences, but were not given a seat at the table and often forcibly expelled. In 2009, the second edition of Hoodwinked in the Hothouse, False Solutions to Climate Change, was published for COP15 in Copenhagen. It was 28 pages long. The third edition prepared for the COP26 in Glasgow is 76 pages long. As the climate emergency has intensified, the false solutions have multiplied and overwhelmed the urgently needed reforms. False solutions include carbon pricing, bioenergy, natural gas, hydrogen, landfill gas, waste incineration, nuclear power, hydroelectricity, geoengineering, carbon capture, and even aspects of nature-based solutions and renewable energy. In this last and fourth program on Hoodwinked in the Hothouse, you will hear about false solutions proposed not by fossil fuel interests, but even by environmental organizations and funders and the so-called Big Greens. Also, there are questions asked about current policies, such as Build Back Better and the 30 by 30 campaigns of the Biden administration. First, here's Ananda Tan, coordinator for the Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives, introducing Tom Goldtooth from the Indigenous Environmental Network. Here's Ananda Tan.
All the efforts at the community level, all the local, deep, systemic change solutions that people are cultivating on the front lines are basically going to be undermined, clearly undermined, if governments keep pouring billions of dollars into waste incinerators, carbon capture and storage projects, nuclear power plants, mega hydro projects importing, you know, energy from afar off of displaced people's lands. Tom, I know that you've had a history of leading this charge and sometimes challenging our Big Green partners. Like, you know, there's some folks we obviously need to call out, like the Nature Conservancy, Conservation International, some of the sponsors of New York Climate Week, in fact. But how do we deal with even those, the moderates who are still quick to rush to where the funding dollars tell them to go?
As we bring our delegations to these UN meetings, and our delegation comes from not only the North, but the Global South as well. And one thing that has really made our campaign strong is grassroots mobilization, developing popular education materials. When I first came upon these issues, you know, I started to go at the UN in the early years with my eyes open and heart really looking at answers and solutions. And I had to really study, you know, what we are calling false solutions, especially market systems. That wasn't my specialty when I was going to school, you know. But I had to really look at carbon markets and that whole scenario of what it is. And if they say that it's a mechanism to address climate change, and how does it utilize the forests of our brothers and sisters from the Amazon, who were also asking some deep questions. Is this a way that they can seek titling of their land? And there were a lot of promises made by large NGOs and funding from the World Bank and countries like Norway, who has state-funded petroleum, you know, fossil fuel industry, funding these false solutions, telling our indigenous brothers and sisters from the Amazon and tropical forests that they can make big money, that they're going to pay them for their traditional knowledge. And how that works is that they give them a measuring tape to measure trees, because they need to inventory the forest for its carbon content. It becomes a whole world quantification of life in itself. So I believed in this case that people need information. They need a way to demystify something that has been created to keep the public out of these hallways and in these meetings. In America, basically, it's been the large environmental organizations in that relationship that's pretty close. And some of them are a revolving door to private sector corporations. They marginalize us. They say, well, you know, let's be practical. You're not going to really stop this. And let's develop safeguards. We hear you that it can cause land grabs, and we call them the fixer-uppers. I'm concerned about Biden's 30 times 30. Everyone's like accepting it when it's a red flag to us because of our experience in this work. Where is the money for the 30 by 30? 30% set aside for conservation, inland, freshwater, oceans, coastal areas, 30 by 30. It's going to be a major conservation carbon offset system. So who at the end of the day owns the carbon in the conservation site? It's the polluting industry. They're going to be throwing down money to set this land as offsets while they continue to pollute. It's insane.
Thanks, Tom. And Ariel, Jackie, Monyeka, I know each of you have had extensive dealings with some of our big greens. Sometimes they're allies, and it's complex. How have you all handled or tackled these nuanced positions? Because we need to shift these minds. What are some of the other tactics and strategies you all feel we need to deploy? And name people unabashedly.
That was Ananda Tan. Next up is Arielle Deranger. She was the founding member of Indigenous Climate Action in Canada. The birds living with her in her home have a lot to say.
I'll go. No one else is jumping the gun. I think that the reality is that I've heard over and over and over again from a lot of the sort of traditional environmental movement folks and organizations and movements that getting something is better than getting nothing. As a justification for their moving and backing and supporting false solutions or solutions that further undermine or subjugate, marginalize, disempower people of color. And I think that it's easy for them to justify that because they come from a very privileged place. They come from a place where their organizations are founded on ideologies of white environmentalism, that the environment is something to be protected for the elite. The environmental movement really sort of stems from the national parks paradigm, the protecting nature for the enjoyment of the elite. So of course, it's easy to justify the continuation of, you know, extractivism in Indigenous communities, of the exploitation of labor, of the continuation of status quo within a predatory capitalist society that we live in. And so some of the tactics and strategies are not just focusing on interrupting the colonial state. Like, we have to also interrupt people that have been our allies, because in many cases in the past decade, our allies have utilized our stories through tokenistic and appropriating processes that have done little to actually build up our communities, to build a movement of people of color. Rather, they're utilizing our stories to help justify their power as the people that are making the decisions. And that means stepping in. When they say, oh, we're looking for a new Indigenous like researcher to join our team, say, why? Why are you joining us? You know, we're hiring all these people of color to help us build our programs. Is that really your job? Is that really your place? Because you know what would be better? Don't take that resource and that grant to hire a person of color. Give that to a people of color organization, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color organization, to let them do it for themselves. That is actually upholding self-determination, sovereignty, free, prior, and informed consent, not sucking up all the air and asking us to join their movement. And this is an uncomfortable call conversation to call out our allies, but we aren't going to win the movement without them either. We have to have them on our side. And if that means we need to have hard, uncomfortable conversations with our allies, and you need to be willing to get uncomfortable. You need to be willing to feel a little bit like agitated, and you have to ask yourself why. Because if we continue to allow these organizations to push false solutions, it continues to undermine our strength as Indigenous, Black, people of color movements to push forward our agendas for self-determined, community-oriented, grassroots-led solutions that support justice frameworks for us to be free from the clutches of colonial capitalist systems that have oppressed our people for generations.
Thanks, Ariel. I love that you brought up the fact that we're going to have to engage with. We can't avoid sidestep unless, Tom reminds us of, I think, of Oren Lyons' statement from the past of, if you're not at the table, you're going to be end up on the menu. In that regard, Monyeka, you've had some dealings with folks advancing blue carbon offsets and other things. Do you have any thoughts on how do we actually challenge spaces where they're attempting to speak on behalf of frontline communities?
Yes, thank you. And in regards to, you know, the ocean is the second lung of the world, the Amazon and all our other rainforests being the other. And it's really important that when, even just for me and in my own region, really looking at where money is going, and most of it is going to conservation and ocean conservation. And there is very little talk in those discussions because it is really pushed by scientists and by the educational institutions as some of the wins for our movements. Like there's one like the Micronesian Challenge where they're getting millions and millions of dollars every year from the Nature Conservancy, from other different big green organizations that really just want to focus on the environmental aspect of protecting coral reefs and growing mangroves and really just doing that work without ever doing any deep analysis on the political structures that keep us oppressed and the political structures that also put pressure to deforest our lands and to harm our environment in deeper ways. One conversation that has been a recurring conversation in the climate justice spaces is what to do about the Bezos Fund. You know, he donated $10 billion to different environmental fronts, and most of them were big greens who don't share our principled practices when it comes to the climate crisis. And it's such an interesting space to be a part of climate justice, and we really want to question how was it that Bezos was able to increase his wealth during a pandemic? How was it that we have these systems that these rich elite people are feeling good about themselves for creating the problem and then just throwing money to make it seem like they're doing something about it? And it's really important that we continue to ask those questions, put pressure on these allies or not, to invest in grassroots frontline organizing and to really build power and take power away from those structures that have harmed our communities and continuously destroy our environment. And it's so simple, but it's so difficult given all the different political divisions in our communities today across the states, across the world. It's really that marketing scheme that Tom and both Ariel and Jackie has spoken to is really important to unravel and understand. And again, that's why I think Hoodwinked is such a perfect resource for anyone coming into this climate justice movement to really grasp the gravity of ways in which we need to be moving forward and ways in which we need to be resisting these false solutions.
Thanks, Monyeka.
That was Monyeka Dioro of the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance. Now Ananda Tan is introducing Jackie Patterson. She's the executive director of the Chisholm Legacy Project in the US.
Well, Jackie, do you have any thoughts on, because you're someone who I find is very compelling and very soft and gentle, but very, you know, clear ways. And what are some of, have been some of your experiences of working in some of these worlds and trying to shift funding towards the front lines? And what gets us to change the perspectives and worldviews of some of our big green allies, if you will?
Yeah, thank you. What I've been talking to some of these folks often, it's really kind of getting people to be clear on outcomes and strategy. Like, because a lot of times people will say that this is what they want, and then having to really break it down and say, okay, yeah, you know, we want maybe similar things, but the path to get there, here's where we differ. And that's what some of the conversations I've been having, even with some of these major money movers, it's been really around that, and having to really point out that it's really only through grassroots action and grassroots leadership that what you're claiming you want is actually going to happen. And so that's what I find myself kind of constantly doing. This is why often when you see the different things that I write, it always ends with like a whole long list of the people that are already doing what we need to have done. And it goes back to what I said in the very beginning, that it's all about kind of showing that we already have the solutions, that the solutions are already in motion. And what we need is for other people to really just get behind and get on board. And so that's the kind of what I'm constantly hammering home, which, you know, has mixed success, but that's the method, as you say, just kind of continuing to put it in front of people. So thank you.
Thanks, Jackie. I want to allow sort of a last round of reflections, because I think as we move forward, we talked a bit about what are the real solutions. I think our last few speakers have gotten us on that path of we need to engage in this messy conversation. Sure, part of moving away towards a real solutions framework is moving away from dominant culture with its avoidance of conflict, with its avoidance of messy, with its avoidance of complexity and its tendency towards reductionism, to really get to a more holistic place. But how do we do that? I mean, in real terms, because part of it does involve decolonizing our own, sometimes our own communities, our own peoples, and breaking away from these systems that still have us pandering to a dominant culture model of failure. Let's see, whoever would like to go. Tom, please.
Yeah, Ananda, thank you. Just, you know, a couple of minutes here. The big elephant in the room is fossil fuels. We need to unite and build solidarity across the board with all the listeners and all your relatives, and address this issue from domestic policy here in the US, Canada, and globally, especially EU, European Union, is addressing the issue of moving away from a fossil fuel economy, stopping the fossil fuel subsidies. We're invested, but the World Bank is invested in fossil fuels. It's a big contradiction. I want to say real quick on Article 6 that you mentioned, for folks that don't know what that is. Out of the Paris Agreement in 2015, there's a lot of follow-up to implement the different articles of the agreement. There's sessions on the rulemaking. And one of those is a highly contested component of the Paris Agreement that introduces the concepts of internationally transferred mitigation outcomes. Internationally transferred mitigation outcomes. And what that will allow, if it's approved, Article 6, it allows the transferring of a country's national determined contributions to another country's national determined contributions. So the national determined contributions are the pledges that the countries of the world are making in cutting their emission reductions, eh? So some countries are forcing a green light to use carbon trading and offsetting, what we've been talking about, and even some of the geoengineering technologies as a way of pretending to fulfill their national climate emissions reduction pledges. So we're mobilizing there like we did in Madrid in 2019 in protests of not only the NGOs and Indigenous Peoples organizations, but Youth and Women Caucus, but some of the countries themselves. That's when a lot of our protesters were led outside of the UN and locked out. Some of you may remember that. So we need to mobilize, we need to be there. And the decision makers don't really want us there in the first place. So I just wanted to add that to it. And traditional knowledge of our Indigenous peoples, you know, we're doing everything we can as a form of resistance, is decolonizing ourselves, coming back to rebuilding our communities, Indigenous-based economies, our own determination of our food systems, our housing, our language revitalization. So that's a major resistance campaign that we are part of and encouraging throughout the world as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Monika, do you have any closing thoughts, reflections?
I definitely do want to, again, call and uplift the struggles of my people to demilitarize and decolonize. I'm part of the Chamorro Nation out here in the Marianas, and we have been U.S. territory since 1898 and post-World War II, even more so. And I think really just driving home that piece, we really do need to ensure that internationally we hold military institutions to the protocols, and that we should stop exempting the military, especially the US military, who's the largest consumer of fossil fuels, single largest producer of pollutants on the planet, as well as the protector of the fossil fuel industry, and just drive that fact home. And also just wanted, it's a full moon, it's a full moon now, and I think it's also really important to, for everyone to reattune themselves back out to nature, to really take time and space to take care of themselves. It's a really distressing time in our world today, and any moments that you can find to be mindful, to be present, and to be conscious of our interconnectedness is also a big part of how we need to be showing up in this climate movement, and how we need to be accountable to our own personal health, because really this movement is so demanding of us, mind, body, spirit, and it's so important that we do the work that we need to do to take care of ourselves and our communities, trying to build new systems and a new way of being.
Thanks, Monika. Jackie, would you like to share some closing reflections?
Sure, thank you. Yes, after Monika's beautiful sharing, this is going to seem hyper-tactical, but in the U.S., I feel like we need to get money out of politics. The undue influence of the fossil fuel industry and these other industries is just, you know, egregiously damaging here. And we really need all movements to get behind getting money out of politics. Thank you.
I'm going to echo Jackie on that. It's not even just out of politics. We need to get all of our public dollars, all of our personal dollars out of the fossil fuel industry. There is a growing divestment movement, and we need that divestment movement also to be challenged to have it being community led. Because if we talk divestment, what is reinvestment? And if our community's initiatives and solutions are not valued or held up at an equal platform and in an equal position, then we're going to see reinvestments being led by the same corporations that have led the tragedy of the climate crisis that we're in. We'll just see Exxon building massive solar farms. And so we have to talk about divestment, divestment of oil and gas out of our politics, divestment out of our dollars into the bank systems, into insurance, into our pension funds, divestment across the board. But that divestment needs to be led by community. And so bottom line, we need to be talking about decolonizing structures. We need to be building up our communities, building our power back in our communities to be seen, to be validated by ourselves. We don't need white validation. We need validation by ourselves, because years of colonization has made it so hard that when we see the validation from our own communities, we don't always hear it. But we need to empower our communities that we say, I see you, you are powerful, you are beautiful, you have the solutions right there. And then when we empower our communities, when we talk about divestment and reinvestment, all those beautiful solutions, and I've seen it in the chat, Black women are already building solutions, femmes are building solutions, Indigenous people are building solutions. Like, these solutions are everywhere. It's about valuing them, holding them up, deeply investing in them, and changing the narrative away from this economic-based structure of addressing the climate crisis that will require us to decolonize our minds, decolonize our processes, and move forward together, unified in the struggle to address the climate crisis, not from a carbon accounting way, but from a holistic approach that asks us all to do what Monyeka said, put our feet in the soil, be connected, be together as one. And that's going to take a lot of undoing, but I really believe we can do it. And we can't take those shortcuts. We can't just say something is better than nothing. We have to demand better, and we have to do it now.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, my humble respects and gratitude to each and every one of you. I'd like to invite our sister Monyeka to close us off in the right way.
Thank you so much, everyone. That was really, really so enlightening and powerful. If you can just put your hands over your heart so we can all, like Ariel said, try to be one. Take a nice deep breath. And I'm gonna lead us out with the chant called Unuhit, which is just a reminder and a prayer that we are all one and we are all connected. Unuhit Zanitanu Itasi atau Zani Lange. We are one with the earth, with the sky, with the sun, with the sea. We are one. Unuhit. Susmasi, everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Merci, Cho. Thank you.
And that was Monyeka Dioro from Micronesia, closing off a conversation on false solutions to climate change. The full webinar was streamed live on September 21st, 2021, and is posted on the Indigenous Environmental Network YouTube channel under the title Hoodwinked in the Hothouse. They all value the free booklet Hoodwinked in the Hothouse, Resist False Solutions to Climate Change. It is a living document of decades of experience, updated just recently in preparation for COP26, the 2021 climate conference in Glasgow. The 76-page pamphlet can be downloaded for free at climatefalsesolutions.org. That's one word, climatefalsesolutions.org. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.